Nothing makes my friend and co-host John Shannon happier than talking hockey.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing, since you spend so much time in Edmonton over the course of the hockey season, I'm guessing you're very much looking forward to this discussion as the general manager of the Oilers, Ken Holland, joins us today.
Well, to be clear, I don't think there's a better interview in the game of hockey, at least from a manager's perspective, than Kenny Holland.
Can't disagree.
And so when he was in Detroit, he was a great conversationalist. The fascination thing about Kenny is that he's one of those guys, if you send Kenny a text, the phone will ring. And the phone will ring is, he says, I can't text you because the nuance of what I'm trying to tell you won't make sense. So then, and
my kind of guy, I hate texting.
So, and the other thing is, when you listen to Kenny speak, I will tell you that you hear a little bit of Scotty Bowman in him. And we've had Scotty on enough over the years too, Bob, to know that these guys just, they love the game so much and they love to explain the game so much and they have so much history in the game that it's fun to sit back and listen to them. And that's why he's such a great interview.
Well, the other thing is, while they have been in the game, and I'm talking about Bowman and Holland, while they've been in the game all their lives, They are not stuck in that rut of this is how we do it and nobody's going to talk me out of it. I think both of them are open to the evolution of the sport and changes that may take place. And I respect that a great deal.
Yeah. And I think Kenny has had, you know, he was in Detroit a long time, more than 20 years. And I think the last 3 years in Edmonton, coming to a Canadian market has opened Kenny's eyes a little bit. Now, Detroit was a tough place to play, but Detroit as an American market, the passion for the Red Wings, I think is not near as the same as the passion for the Oilers in Edmonton. I mean, Kenny can't go to the corner store in the suburbs or downtown in Edmonton without being, I'm sure, yelled at.
Yeah, or yelled at.
And yelled at saying, well, why'd you trade Bear? Or something that says, you know, what's going on with the power play? You know, fix the goaltending. You know, I think that's a revelation for these guys. And I think that what we've seen in the last 3 years is that in many ways, Kenny has remained consistent, which is really good. Some guys can't take that pressure, Bob, to come to Canada. You know, the guy he really replaced, Peter Chiarelli, had a difficult time with it. Had a difficult time with the limelight. You know, 20 years ago, John Ferguson Jr. was named the general manager of the Maple Leafs, had a difficult time understanding that, you know, when he's going through the shopping mall and people are yelling at him, why are they yelling at him? Well, it's because it's the Toronto Maple Leafs and people love team and they care. So Kenny has been able to adapt to that, I think, really well in Edmonton. And there's a ton of criticism in Edmonton. You know, why, you know, this week it's, why did you sign Duncan Keith? He wouldn't get vaccinated until you made him. You know, there's lots of things that people bitch and complain about that Kenny seems to have adapted pretty well to working in a Canadian market.
I'm not going to sit here and tell you I have any idea how many passionate hockey fans there are in Detroit. There are plenty. But if there's 100,000 of them in Detroit, there's 500,000 of them in Edmonton. And the point of difference is, as you mentioned, it's not so much when you're in the arena, because all the fans that are in the building are fans. It's when you're not in the arena. And those extra 400,000 do creep up on you, if you will.
And a guy like Kenny, again, I have biases. I've known him for ages. A guy like Kenny will always give you time. He will always give you time to explain why he's done it, what he's done, and what's going to happen next. He's pretty thorough in that. And he's also one of those guys, like Scotty is.
Yep.
At a certain point in the conversation, you say, well, what do you think? Because he's always wanting information. He always wants information.
Those are the guys that succeed. Pat Gillick was one of those guys too. We'll take the break. When we come back, Ken Holland, general manager, Edmonton Oilers, back after this. McCowan and Shannon with you. And joining us from roadside, somewhere between Edmonton and Calgary, is the general manager of the Edmonton Oilers, Ken Holland, who is with us, who is on his way to Calgary to see, I gather for the first time, your latest grandchild, a boy. But Mr. Holland has, Mr. Holland's family has been extremely prolific of late. He has 8 grandchildren, with a 9th coming in a couple of weeks. Are you exhausted? Are you tired? Do you know any of their names? Do you remember their names?
Yeah, I know a few of the names. Yeah. Friday night, one of our daughters had a baby boy. So, last night after the game, we played Calgary. Dave Tippett gave everybody today the day off. So I decided that I'd get my first look at our 8th grandchild. So I'm excited here. So I pulled off on the road here halfway between Calgary and Edmonton and do this interview. And then I'll get down and spend the day with my daughter and our new grandson and back to Edmonton tomorrow morning.
Well, we will try and keep you as short a period of time as we possibly can. We greatly appreciate it.
Or maybe not. Maybe, you know, the magic of being a grandparent is be able to give the baby back at a certain point, right?
Yeah. At least I don't have any night work. That's up to my daughter to get up in the middle of the night. My wife Cindy and I paid our dues in raising our 4 kids. So it's somebody else's turn.
Well, you also said when you 6 years ago you had no grandchildren, and now you're going to have 9. That are they going to stop at some point, or you know, are you heading for double digits at least?
Yeah, we've got 4 children, and like I said, I was 59 years old. We had no grandchildren in the last 6 years. We've got 8, and number 9's coming in the middle of November. So, and our youngest son's getting married next July. So I'm sure he'll. He and his wife will have some. So I'm assuming we're going to get double digits.
Well, we congratulate you and wish you good luck. And as I said previously, and just trying to remember all the names. So I want to start on something a little bit curious, perhaps. So not really about your team, but more generic. We have seen the National Football League reduce their number of preseason games, and we know that the motivation is perhaps different because it's purely economical, really. But there is a reality here that preseason games in any sport are of the least interest to the fans. And I'm wondering whether you think they are worthwhile. You just came off a season where you played no preseason games. You didn't play do anything other than the team practice beforehand. Have we gotten into a situation here, Kenny, where just because it's been done this way for so long, we just accept it, and maybe it isn't worth the time, the trouble?
It's interesting you say that. I mean, we were talking last night after the game, I think Bob Nicholson and a few, I was talking, I think in 2005, we used to have a 28-day training camp. And I remember we didn't play any preseason games the first week, and now training camp has been reduced from 28 days to 21. And by day 3, you can have preseason games. So, you know, it really speaks to the, our athletes, their commitment in the off season. When they come to training camp, they're ready to roll. Now, I do think you do need some preseason games. I don't know. We play 8 this year. I'm not sure what the number is, probably reduced from there. You know, you do like to have the opportunity to look at some of your young players to play some games. I think the vets probably like to play, you know, 2 to 4. So, you know, I think in the NFL, they reduced the preseason and added on one more regular season. I think they went
That's
from
right.
16 regular season to 17 regular season. So they took the one preseason and made it a regular season game. But again, we play 8 games because we're allowed to. And it's an opportunity to play lots of young players and some players that play in the American League that might not otherwise get a chance to give them an opportunity to see what they can do and have them feel good about themselves as they head down to the American League team.
But you've been doing this a long time. How, I don't know, John may be about to ask the same question. How many times over the course of your career has somebody impressed you enough during a preseason game to actually make the difference and make the team? And I mean, impress you during a game rather than his, you know, the practices that you have.
Well, really, there's very few opportunities. I think most teams go to training camp. If you're going to carry 23, which is the limit, you know, maybe, you know, 21 or 22 are almost on the team before you go to training camp. So there's, there's a spot open. You know, I would look, you know, I would say this year in preseason, we've played six preseason games. Brendan Perlini's got 5 goals, you know, so, you know, he's a player that we signed. Obviously, he's been around pro hockey. You know, he's made a real statement and a real case here in preseason to try to get on the opening day roster. If we had no preseason games, probably we might have a different decision. So, but the reality, Bob, is I think it's an opportunity for maybe one person. You know, it's not like you're going to come to camp and 5 or 6 people are going to force their way onto the team. And
We
do all those. We make all those decisions in the off season.
Of course, and that Kenny is exactly what my point is. Is, you know, and those decisions that you're going to make, whether it's one player, two players, however many, could you not make those through practice sessions without having to go through all these games? And as you also said, the players come to camp now in shape. You know, training camp, we all know historically, was where the guys got into shape. Not anymore. They're ready to go. And you know,
you're right. I'm agreeing with you. I think, you know, I think again, if my memory serves me correct, I think in the 2004-05 there, when we had the work stoppage, we used to have 28 days and 9 games. The preseason games allowed, they reduced it from 28 days to 21. So a week was cut off of training camp. We reduced it from 9 preseason games to 8. You know, we play 8, but you know, if you played, I think you probably need 4 preseason games for sure. You know, everybody likes to play a couple of games before the real games start. But, you know, do you need 8? Probably you don't need 8. It's an opportunity. I think, Bob Moore, it's about, you know, we just sent down Philip Broberg. He's our first round pick from 2 years ago. I think he played 4 preseason games. And, you know, it's an opportunity for Evan Bouchard, who didn't play a lot of hockey last year. He was on our team. I think he played 10 games out of the 56. He's playing almost every preseason game. So preseason, it's not for the established players. It's more for young players to get some experience before they go down to show what they can do. And then again, maybe one player to force his way onto the roster by having a good preseason.
The dilemma you must face is, how do you quantify the performance of a young player when, for the most part, you would acknowledge that the competition that they are facing is just a drizzle of NHL talent, and most of it is talent that these guys will have played, if they played in the minors, they will have faced on an ongoing basis. How do you quantify a performance? A guy goes out, as you said, scores 5 goals in preseason, but how many of them are against real NHL competition?
Well, you know, most of the rosters in the first week are probably half and half. You know, they're half NHL players. You know, there's limits now. You have to have, you know, minimum of 8, and they got to meet a criteria. So the first week it's half and half. You know, how do you quantify it? I mean, you would quantify it the best we can. And then, you know, if we like what they do the first week, they might be here for the second week. Now, the way our preseason games worked out, we played 5 games the first week, and we've only got 3 games this week. So, you know, we basically cut down to 15, 8, and 3. We're almost we have to let a goalie, 1 defenseman, and 1 forward go by Sunday. So Coach Tippett wanted to get down to the team the last week. He wants to work on systems. Sure. And the last 3 preseason games, last night we played Calgary. It was almost – you know, pretty close to both teams, you know, maybe a player missing on each team or 2 max. So it was a good game to evaluate, but it was really our teams. It wasn't a lot of young players. So it's hard to quantify, but it's another opportunity to look at a young player. And more so, I don't know, it's an opportunity for us to evaluate and quantify. I think it's more the other way around. It's for the young players you know, last week we have some young defensemen, Nima Lyon and Camp Broberg, Berglund. It's an opportunity for them to get their feet wet at a level, professional level that's above the American League. And when you're leaving Europe, or you're leaving junior, or leaving college, it's obviously a bigger step than the leagues that they played in. It's a chance for them to, I use the word, get their feet wet, you know, even just for a few games, to give them some information as to what they need to do to become an NHL regular.
Kenny, how would you describe the journey that you and Josh Archibald have gone through the last 3 or 4 weeks?
Well, it's been tough. I mean, you know, on Archie came here and he immediately had to go into quarantine for 2 weeks. You know, so when he crossed the border, he was in, you know, with his family in Nebraska all summer. Crossed the border, immediately went into 2 week of quarantine. You know, certainly had talked to him, knew that he, you know, didn't want to get vaccinated, was really planning on when he come out of quarantine to sit down with him and talk to him. And while he was in quarantine, near the end, the last 4 or 5 days, he got really ill, lost a lot of weight, and got some type of a viral infection. And then when he got out of quarantine, he started to skate the first couple of days on his own and just felt that something wasn't right. So then we spent the next 4 or 5 days putting him through a battery of tests and eventually found out that he's got myocarditis. So it's been tough. It's been real tough. It's a tough situation, obviously, you know, from a health standpoint. And then obviously, you know, as I said in my opening press conference, you know, we looked at the calendar for being a Canadian team and having an unvaccinated player and crossing the border multiple times was going to make it very, very difficult to for Josh to have any kind of an impact on our team. But obviously we never got there because he didn't even get out of quarantine before, and he started to get very sick.
So what's the prognosis then? I mean, not many people understand what myocarditis is and how long it takes to get over it, if at all.
Well, my understanding, again, you know, John, you know, I'm not a doctor. You know, I'm a hockey administrator. My understanding is, so if it comes out, my understanding is it's some type of an inflammation, either on or around the heart. You do get over it. It does take some time. I think it could take anywhere from 1 to 3 months. Again, it's an inflammation. And obviously, because it's around the heart, it's very serious. And while you've got it, you cannot, you know, put a lot of pressure, stress on your heart. So that's why you just got to wait for lack of a better words, the inflammation. I'm going to use the word inflammation, but again, I'm not a doctor, to run its course. Then they can get up and running. So it's gonna. We have no time frame. We have no time frame. But I know we're talking. You know, we're not talking a week or two. We're talking a month or two or three.
Have the doctors indicated to you, Kenny, whether his positive COVID test impacted on this? Was this the cause? Did they think?
Well, they don't know. It certainly could be. But he also had that. They gave me some long word, gastrus something or other, but he had, when he was in quarantine, he got some other type of an illness. So either could have caused it. The doctors tell me, you know, even if he was vaccinated, even vaccinated people can also get myocarditis. So it's not like if you get vaccinated, you don't get it. It's, you know, so it's obviously it's a very serious situation. And, you know, anytime you're dealing with somebody's heart.
I got vaccinated as fast as I was able to. I know you did too, Kenny. You yep. got your family got your vaccines right away as soon as you were eligible. John, I'm 99.9% sure you were the same. Mm-hmm. it is difficult for me to understand how, what reasons somebody gives for not getting vaccinated, but you have to, but I don't deal with them. You have to, you've got, had at least a couple of players, including Duncan Keith, who you had to deal with that situation with. What kind of reasoning do they give? And is it, can you possibly be sympathetic to it?
You know, I obviously first order, I, you know, it's personal choice. And I'm with you. I mean, I think I said at the press conference, my wife and I couldn't wait in March when the 60s, we're in our 60s, could go get vaccinated. We went and get vaccinated and we're anxious for fall here to go get a booster shot. So I'm with you. You know, I we've got vaccinated and the very first opportunity we're in there getting, getting our vaccinations and can't wait to get our booster shot. So, you know, obviously it's personal choice. And then I think they, you know, they talk to a lot of people and gather their own information. Certainly. I mean, there's a difference of opinion. I can't understand. They probably can't understand why I'm getting vaccinated and I can't understand why they're not getting vaccinated, but certainly I believe in all the medical information and everybody is the governments and everybody's saying you should get vaccinated. And I did it as fast as I could.
It's frustrating at times, really, when you consider that we're supposed to be talking hockey and it always circles back to vaccinations, doesn't it?
Well, it's the world we live in. Obviously, times when the pandemic hit, you know, in March of 2019, all our worlds changed. So, you know, it's different times.
Speaking of Duncan, how's he looked?
Well, he played his first game last night. He came out of quarantine on Friday, so he's been on, was on the ice Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and played last night. So, you know, he's been in quarantine for 14 days. You know, he's a guy. You know, he was in Edmonton just before he'd come from Penticton, come to Edmonton for a few days. He's not a big guy. He said he's now always never been a big guy to skate in. You know, in July and August. So he hasn't been on the ice very much. You know, he was on the ice for a few days. Then he made the decision to go get the U.S. to get the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and then have to come back and quarantine for 2 weeks. So he's probably only been on the ice total, almost a week. So, you know, he looked fine last night. You know, he'll play again Thursday. I would anticipate he'll play our last two preseason games. And, you know, he's going to need the next 10 days of practicing and playing to get himself ready for opening night.
Is he? Do you anticipate he'll be able to play the vast majority of games this year? I mean, I don't know if he plays 82, but
Well, I would think so. I mean, I've talked to him. He wants to. I mean, I think Bob, you know, he made a decision for personal reasons and professional reasons that he wanted to come out west and personally to be closer to his son. I think professionally he wanted a new challenge. And I think, you know, and then he obviously made a decision to get vaccinated so that he doesn't have to deal with the cross borders. And, you know, I kind of walked through the calendar with him. So I think he's made decisions over the last 3-4 months that would indicate that he wants to be in there every night. He wants to be an important piece of our team.
You're well aware that in this new era of sport, the concept of resting players almost in every sport is not uncommon. In fact, it's become quite common, perhaps less so in the National Hockey League than in other sports. I think the Toronto Blue Jays, for example, had one player play 162 games. That was Semien. Football slightly different. Basketball, very few players play a full 82 game schedule. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about the notion of there being an advantage to resting players, even significant players, not necessarily on a regular basis, but periodically over the course of the year? Do you think there's advantage in that?
Well, absolutely. The answer is yes. Now, I think what's happened, you know, certainly, you know, there's a mandatory in the collective bargaining agreement every week. There's one mandatory off day in seven. But on top of that, I think, you know, 15 years ago, Bob, practices were an hour and a half. You know, hour and 15 to an hour and a half. Practices now are 45 to 50 minutes. I've had different coaches. You know, practices are probably a half an hour shorter than they were 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And I also think that the coaches now, all the coaches give those players that play, you know, lots of minutes, they get extra day off here and there. So I think we try to do in our sport things to have our best players field their best lineup on an every day, but giving them more shortening practices, you know, keeping track of their workload. You know, the training staff will tell Dave Tippett, you know, you think you better back off on this player, or you should give the team an extra day off. So we try to do things to keep them fresh, because to play at their best, they need to be fresh. They can't be worn down. They can't be tired. So, you know, in our sport right now, I think the philosophy is that we want to ice our best roster. Does that change 3, 4, 5 years from now? I don't know. I think because of the salary cap, because of the race to the playoffs, because how difficult it is to make the playoffs, you know, and there's photo finishes to get in, you know, you make or miss the playoffs by 3, 4, 5 points. I think for the most part, the philosophy in our sport is to dress your best lineup as often as you can.
Yeah, I get that, Kenny. I mean, and John, you'll forgive me because John's heard this speech a few times. Maybe you have too, but I would have a significant understanding if you said philosophically you believe that a forward or a defenseman should not play 82 games, that you should give them a few days off, like actually miss games, forget practices, actually take a few games off over the course of the season. And that doesn't happen hardly at all. A guy doesn't play if he's hurt, really, is essentially it, or it's late in the season and there's a nothing game in the last week. And yet at the same time, I'm reminded of this because I picked up my phone this morning and saw a picture of 90-year-old Glenn Hall with, I think, 77-year-old Bernie Parent. I may be wrong on Bernie's age. but Glenn, I think, is 90 and still around. He played
around Edmonton, you know.
Yep. Played 502 consecutive games. What is with the wussy goaltenders that we have in the National Hockey League right now? Where if you play 65, they think you should be exhausted.
I think, you know, at the end of the day, it's communication. I think that certainly the coaches I've dealt with, Dave Tippett, Mike Babcock, you know, those would be the Jeff Blashill.
Right.
They talk to the players. You know, I don't think that Dave Tippett's just going to sit out and healthy scratch one of our star players on his own. He's going to talk to that star player and say, you know, you played a lot of minutes. We've played a lot of games. We're playing 6 games in 9 nights. We've been in all these things. The training staff says that your numbers, that you've got a big workload. And then the player's going to be involved in that decision. So I think that right now our players, they want to play. Like they want to play. I that's even the case in the preseason. Like I asked Tip the other day, you know, what are your plans with Connor and Leon and some of the guys, you know, the last 3, 4 preseason games. And he said, you know, Ken, I'm going to talk to our players here. You know, they're going to play Monday. They want to play Thursday. And then I'm going to regroup and talk to them on Friday and see, do they want to play the last preseason game or do they want to take it off? So it's, you know, it's not like the coach just says, you're not playing the last preseason game. It's the decisions are made, you know, with the player and our players, the mentality is that they want to play, but certainly it's based upon, you look at the schedule, you know, you look at the amount of games, you look at their workload, the minutes played. You know, if somebody's playing the bottom part of the roster and they're a forward and they're playing 8 to 10 minutes, they probably want to play every game. You know, I think you're talking about star players, and I think that that's a decision that's made by the coach and the player and the training staff all together.
All right. So what about goaltenders though? So you got a goaltender plays maybe 65 games during a regular season. Now you get to the playoffs. If you have four consecutive seven-game series, Kenny, now you're going to ask that guy in all likelihood to play 28 consecutive games. How does that make sense?
That's a good problem to have.
The last time I had a 60-game goalie, I think, was I'm trying as you're talking, I was probably Dominic Hasek, probably, you know, 15, 20 years ago. Since then,
2002.
Since 2002. You know, we had Osgood and Legacy, and it was Osgood and Hasek, and then it was Osgood and Howard, and then it was, so now I've got Smith and Koskinen. I think it looks like the number one goalies play 60 games, 60 to 65. They still have 15 to 17 off. And then, in our case here in Edmonton, Mike Smith and Smitty played 32, I think, of the last 45 last year, but it was a different schedule. We'd go into on the road. We played the same city for two games. But, again, I think that is really based upon if you've got a number one goalie, how you feel and how's he playing? Well, you can tell when the players are getting tired. As an example, Bob, last night after the game, Dave Tippett said to me, Ken, he said, I thought we looked tired in the first period. He said, I put him through a really demanding practice on Sunday, and we were going to have a practice today, Tuesday, and he decided last night at 10:30 after the game, he's given the team off because he thought the team needed they needed the rest rather than the practice. So I think you make these decisions on a day-to-day basis based upon the information that we get in watching the games and talking to our training staff and talking to whether you make a decision to give the team a day off or you make a decision to give a player a day off. You talk to the player, you talk to the leadership group, and you make those decisions based upon everyday feedback.
Before we go to break, can a 41-year-old goalie play 65 games?
No.
So how many do you think Mike will play?
I mean, I think if you told me that he'd play, it starts with a four, whether it's 41 or 49. I think that's the number. I think, we're a two goalie team. 2 years ago in the pandemic, I think we played 72 games. I think they both played the same amount of games. I think they both played around 36. Last year it ended up that Mike Smith he was the number one guy, but I don't see that this year. Not when you look at the schedule and we're in Arizona one night and we're in Vegas the next night. You need two goalies, so we're a two goalie team, and I think that Mike Smith's I think his number starts with a four, whether it's 40 to 49. That's what if you take injuries out, I can't read into injuries, but I think if both guys are healthy all year, it's either 50-50 or does Mike Smith play a few more games based upon the way he played last year? But I think it starts with a four.
Let's take a quick break. Ken Holland is with us. He's roadside between Calgary and Edmonton. And we'll come back and chat some more after these messages. McCowan, Shannon, Ken Holland, the general manager of the Edmonton Oilers. Zach Hyman was on with us when, John? About 2 weeks ago? Something like that?
Yeah, about that. Just before camp started.
Yeah, we had a chance to have a lengthy chat with him. It was before camp started, as John mentioned. So. Give me your impressions of what you've seen of him close up and day after day. And is he what you thought he was?
Well, I mean, first off, John, Bob, we played Toronto nine times last year. And so,
you got a chance to see him a lot.
We got a real good look at him for firsthand. And he scored, potted some goals against us. And he was a handful. So, obviously made the decision to pursue him. And then sign him, in the first 2 weeks of training camp, a lot of will, a lot of hard work, a lot of determination, lots of drive to the hard areas, to the blue paint, lots of forechecking, lots of protecting of the puck. And I think he's going to be very, very valuable for us. He can play left wing. He can play right wing. He obviously can play in the penalty kill. I think that, in the decisions that we made over the course of the off season, up front, We wanted to add a little more size. We wanted to add players that would go to the paint more. And, you know, that's, you know, the additions of Fogel, the additions of Zach Hyman. We wanted to be a little more tenacious, a little more determined. Derek Ryan is a guy that's, you know, pursues the puck. So those are the dimensions, the things that I think Zach Hyman is going to bring to our team. And he's on an everyday basis. And on top of that, I think a tremendous attitude. You know, you guys have been around, you saw him in Toronto. I mean, he's always positive. He's upbeat and loves to come to the rink. And I think it's contagious. And I think that the things that I just talked about are going to rub off on some of the other players on our team.
You know, the other guy that hasn't received much acknowledgement is when you acquired Warren Fogel. Fogel changes a little bit of the personality of your team too, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he can really skate. He gets in on the forecheck. He'll go to he goes to the blue paint. He's a big guy, 6'2". So, you know, I think, again, obviously made the deal, Ethan Bear for Fogel. We wanted to get deeper up front, you know, and get some secondary scoring, but not only secondary scoring, just to be a little bit bigger, you know, and a little bit heavier and a little bit harder. And, you know, that's why the deals were made. So, you know, certainly Fogel's a big guy. He gets skates, he gets in on the forecheck. You know, in the early going, he's got Fogel with Zach Cassian and Derek Ryan. I'm sure as we go through the year, you know, some of this will switch, but I think there's more options. I'd like to think that the moves we made in the offseason is going to give Dave Tippett a few more options. And then if you have some injuries, a little more depth to try to be a little bit of a different, better team.
When this, so when you took this job, you were in cap hell. I don't think there was any question about it. Do you think you're out of cap hell now?
Well, I think everybody's in cap hell. I think, you know, John, you know, I think you're always in cap hell. I just think that other than maybe, you know, out of 32 teams, 25, you know, 25 are up against it. You know, if when you're trying to win, everybody snuggles their way up to, you know, $1.5 million or $2 million below the cap. What makes ours a little more difficult is we go into LTI with the Clefbaum situation. When you go into LTI, you don't accrue any space, which means when you get to the salary at the trade deadline, you haven't, you know, the $1 million under the cap in a normal year can grow to almost $4 million. You know, you can acquire a player. The $1 million when you're in LTI is still $1 million. You don't accrue space. So it affects the LTI situation, affects the way we run our team. But, you know, we're tight. I mean, we're tight. I obviously made some decisions. You know, I made a decision with Darnell Nurse, who's going to be an unrestricted free agent, or was going to be an unrestricted free agent. You know, when you start to see all the defensemen signed, certainly his number is going to go up dramatically. So I just think that you're always going to be stressed to the limit if you're trying to win in a cap world. And that's why drafting and developing and young players coming through the system that play on entry-level contracts and finding, you know, those cheap veterans on the market that are looking for an opportunity are big pieces to being a successful team.
That leads to a question about two players. Even Dave Tippett now is saying how important Evan Bouchard is to the future of this organization, because he didn't play very much last year, as you alluded to. Where do you see Bouchard's development? And then I got to ask you about Dylan Holloway too.
Well, I mean, you know, Bush is, I mean, obviously he was the 10th pick in the draft, you know, big time point producer and junior, had a real good rookie year in the American Hockey League. You know, he's a skill guy. He's a right shot guy that can move the puck. He's got a big shot. And I think, like most young defensemen, has spent the last the first 2 years of pro hockey, which was 2 years ago, he was in Bakersfield, and last year was on our taxi squad. You know, he's learned to, you know, defend. You know, I think most young defensemen have to learn to defend. So, you know, he's going to be in the lineup every day this year. He's 22 years of age, and certainly we need him to grow into a really important player on this team going forward. So, you know, any young player that's got high ceiling, which Evan Bouchard has, are important players to their team. So Evan's very important. Dylan Holloway, you know, broke his scaphoid in February in his Big Ten college playoffs, had surgery. And over the course of the summer, we took regular pictures of him, and it really got to the point where it was not healing. It got to be about 30% healed, sat there for like 6 to 8 weeks. They gave him a stim. They tried to do things to, you know, the last thing you want to do is do another surgery, but ultimately a decision was made in early September that they had to really redo surgery and do a little bit of a different surgery. He was actually with Edmonton yesterday. The doctor had pictures. The doctor looked at it. Everybody seems to be pleased with where he's at this point in time. He's spent the last couple of weeks in Calgary at home because he was not allowed to work out. They didn't want him to sweat and have to do things with, you know, we're going very, very conservative. He's now been green-lighted to come to Edmonton. And he's going to be in Edmonton for the next couple of months rehabbing. And I'm hoping that, you know, sometime in December or January that he's going to be to back playing, but we're going to be very, very conservative because he turns 20 here after September 15th being a late birthday. So he's just turning 20 years old, and he's very, very important. Another very, very important player to this organization.
So when you say back playing, I would assume that's in Bakersfield?
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't played pro hockey. It wouldn't be fair right to all of a sudden just put him in the NHL. I would think, you know, he's probably going to, you know, I think, John, you know, the hope was after he left the World Junior and he went back and he finished really strong. He was almost 2 points a game in the college season. You know, the hope, you know, the plan was at that point in time in February and March that, you know, take Wisconsin on a run. Let's put you into Bakersfield. Let's finish the year in Bakersfield, get your feet wet and play pro hockey, come to training camp this year in September, and let's see if you can, if Dylan Holloway could make the Edmonton Oilers. And all that has been, timeline has been obviously totally changed. So right. I would say to you right now, it's going to be probably this year, finish the year in Bakersfield. He's got to play some pro games. They're not fair for a 20-year-old that's never played pro hockey coming off, you know, we're going to go from February when he played his last game. It's going to be 10 to 12 months between games. He's 20 years old, can't step in the National Hockey League and play in the National Hockey League. He's going to go to the American League and get to play pro.
The only reason I ask that is, you know how Oiler fans are when they see a young kid and there's an expectation that this guy can be the next great winger. And so
that's why I'm lowering expectations, giving everybody a realistic timeline and wanting to give any young player, Dylan Holloway or any young player, the appropriate time that they need to reach their potential.
Yeah.
Well, before we let you go, John and I were chatting before you came on, and he suggested that one of the challenges that faced you when you went to Edmonton was, you needed to improve the depth in the organization, and clearly you have done that, and it appears successfully. Do you sense that was one of your greatest challenges?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to tell you what I told our guys on, you know, the opening meeting. You know, when I got the job in May of 2019, they, you know, the previous year, I think they'd finished 28th. The team had finished 28th in the regular season. But the year before, they had, or a couple of years earlier, they made the playoffs. You know, we finished 12th overall. We finished 11th overall the last 2 years. Obviously, we've made additions. I think that our team under Coach Tippett is really, we've defended better. You know, we were second and eighth in the league in penalty killing the last 2 years, when I think the previous years they were around 30th or 31st. I think we've defended better. We've kept the puck out of our net. You know, you don't win 6-5 and 7-6. You got to defend. So I think that our team under Coach Tippett, you know, we've competed, and certainly with the moves that we made, you know, the goal is to obviously off the bat be in the playoffs, and compete with the best teams in the Western Conference to try to open at home. I think that's you know, if to open at home, you got to be in the top four teams in the Western Conference. But you know, we haven't been able to do that the last 2 years. So it's to grow and build upon what we've accomplished over the last two previous seasons and take another step forward.
Nobody handicaps things more than you do on a daily basis. You're the second best team in the Pacific.
Well, I mean, hear people talk about that, but you got to play 82 games, John. I think we feel good. I think our team feels good about ourselves. You know, since December the 31st, you know, I guess, you know, the message that I tried to send our team is, you know, we've played at a relatively pretty good regular season level over the last 2 years, and over the last, you know, since December the 31st, we're tied with Toronto and Pittsburgh at having the sixth best winning percentage in the National Hockey League on the last half of the 19-20 season and this 56 game schedule. So it hasn't translated into playoff success. We lost to Chicago in a play-in, and we lost last year in a sweep to Winnipeg. But you, in order to go on a playoff run, you got to make the playoffs. And It's hard to make the playoffs. Half the league misses the playoffs. So, you know, I think that the message is we've played at a high level, but everybody around the league thinks that they've made moves to make their team better. We think we've made moves to make our team better. And we got to continue to focus on, you know, doing the things that you need, being better defensively, making sure we continue to be good on the special team, certainly on the penalty kill. You know, we've been number one in the league in the power play the last 2 years. Find some chemistry, try to get a little bit deeper and get a little bit of secondary scoring, have some young players make a, you know, I'd look at Jesse Puljujärvi, who looks like he's kind of picking up where he left off here in preseason from last year. And we talked about Evan Bouchard and Kyler Yamamoto and McLeod, and behind the scenes, we need the Brobergs and the Holloways to kind of grow and develop into NHL players. So it's obviously the focus is on the big team, but in order for the big team to eventually continue to grow and get better, part of it is the additions that we make. Part of it's got to be the growth of the players on the team, and part of it's got to be that behind the scenes that we are developing another group of players or some players that can come and have some impact on our team going forward.
Listen, Grandpa, we're going to let you go. You got a grandson to meet down the road. So safe drive. And thanks as always for joining us on the program and especially considering the circumstances. Well,
the other thing, Bob, is we know that Kenny's got to come back on in November before he goes into the Hockey Hall of Fame. So, you know, we're booking him right now for the Hockey Hall of Fame week.
It'll be our honor.
Okay. I enjoy talking to you guys. I love your passion.
All the best, Kenny.
Thanks,
safe
guys.
Drive.
Take care. Bye-bye.
The general manager of the Edmonton Oilers, Ken Holland, back after these. Well, we always thank our guest at the beginning of the final segment, and we certainly want to thank Ken Holland. But, you know, guy's driving from Edmonton to Calgary to see his eighth grandchild and pulls over on the side of the road to talk to us for 40, 45 minutes.
It would have been a real story if he kept driving, but that's not allowed.
Well, we wouldn't want that, actually.
No.
We like having his attention, but not everybody would do that. And so we are most appreciative of Mr. Holland's contribution.
I thought it was interesting that he, you know, there's a lot of pressure on the goaltending in Edmonton, Bob, he thought that Mike Smith would not play as many games as a lot of people assume Mike Smith will. I just thought that was fascinating.
I think it's because, and I think he sort of stated this, that Mike Smith is what, 41 years old.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, look at Glenn Hall played 502 consecutive games, but he didn't do it when he was 41 years old. I don't think he might.
No, he wasn't. No, he didn't.
But, you know, I mean, I get the age difference. You know, I mean, it's just that for a goaltender in his mid-20s who's established himself, I just don't understand. I say, well, he's tired. We got to give him 15, 20 games off. And then you get to the playoffs, and then you're going to play him every other night over and over and over again. And you're not going to give him a day off. You're not going to give him a game of rest. And besides which, I was a goaltender. It ain't that hard. So.
Hold on. You were with the Konecny pads, and you weren't allowed to go to your knees.
No, I went to my knees.
The position has changed. The position has changed.
No, the attitude, exactly the same. The attitude towards the position has changed. And they it has changed. It's wrong. They're all nuts.
So the philosophy of goaltending has changed, just like the philosophy of pitching in baseball has changed.
And that's wrong too.
Okay.
You know, I just don't understand why people won't listen to me when I tell them about these things.
Well, we got to make sure they listen to the podcast. Got to get them to find the podcast.
No reason why a pitcher can't throw 150 pitches in a night. And there's no reason why a goaltender can't play 82 consecutive games. If I'm a coach in the NHL and I got one goaltender that's significantly better than the other, that second goaltender's ass is glued to that bench. It's not stapled. It's glued with something that he ain't moving. I don't care if he's there through practices. He ain't going to play. My number one guy is going to play. And he ain't going to get tired.
So you wouldn't be opposed to that 70-game goaltender anymore?
The which?
We haven't seen one.
The seven-inning goal?
A 70-game goaltender. We 82. Haven't seen one in a long time.
You're giving a goaltender the night off? It's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard of.
The world has changed. Back-to-back games and travel. Come on.
Who gives a flying fadoo? It's a goaltender. He ain't skating anywhere. He ain't getting tired during a game. If he gets hurt, that's one thing. If he takes a puck off a noggin and it knocks him out cold, I'll give him a day off. Anything less than that, lace him up, pal. You're
a player. I'm surprised you even would allow for a backup to sit on the bench.
I'm not happy about that. I'd rather get the guy who drives the Zamboni. And how'd that work out?
Well,
all right. Worked out okay.
Won. Yeah, he won.
There you go. We got to go. We'll see you tomorrow. Goodbye, everybody.